Let's take a moment and thank our sponsor, Text Control. There's always something new from Text Control. As a developer, do you need to integrate PDF generation, document editing, or electronic signatures into your ASP.NET Core or Angular applications? Or maybe you want to learn more about the differences between electronic and digital signatures. Text Control is offering a free consulting service to educate you about digital document processing and how Text Control products can help you add these features to your applications. You just go to textcontrol.com/contact and you can request your free personal consultation. How cool is that? Textcontrol.com/contact and you can request a free personal consultation from our friends at Text Control.
Hi, I'm Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, I'm talking with Mecca Williams. She's a principal engineer at NetApp. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Thanks for hanging out with me. This is great. So, I like to look at people's LinkedIns, of course, when we have folks on the show, because I want to learn about their background. And yours and mine are surprisingly similar in one very interesting way. You have worked on lots of projects and you've done a lot over the years, but I think it's fair to say that you've had two big jobs of some length. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's right. Two major jobs that I would talk about if someone asked me what I did.
Yeah. And this is a time, though, in the, I would say maybe in the last five or six years, maybe even the last 10 years, where everyone says you should never stay at your job longer than 2 or 3 years. What do you think?
That's very strange to me. It's never been a philosophy of mine. And I kind of read that and I'm like, well, they're talking about folks that are just coming out of college, right? That could not possibly apply to me. I've never thought that way, nor do I think that way today.
But right now we're hearing things about quiet quitting and late stage capitalism and your job doesn't care about you, all of which are probably true. Mm-hmm. What would cause you to stay for 15 years at this job and 8 or 10 at your last job?
So I think my experience at my very first job out of college kind of set the tone for how I manage and nurture my career. I do believe that you should pay attention to your leadership and how they're treating you and how they treat employees and match what's important to you with what you hear from your leadership. But I work in very high tech. And for those listening that do, this is very complicated work. And it takes time to nurture and go deep. Now, I understand that application development has changed very much over the years since I came out of college and I was doing embedded development. But I mean, it used to take at least 9 months to feel like you were contributing at all and in any significant way. And so to acquire, you know, this kind of rapport and this skill set and to really nurture it always took significant time. And I, you know, in the beginning of my career, I really liked to go very deep. I liked to go into the depths. You know, I studied software engineering, but I also studied microcomputer-based design and the very specific ways we software engineer firmware and technical and complex systems. And so I accumulated these specific skills and I wanted to apply them in very unique ways. And that took time to cultivate and nurture. And the thought of, you know, tossing that out every 2 to 3 years and starting over, I mean, I don't even think I could have gotten there in 2 to 3 years. It's a very interesting concept that I feel like is more niche than, you know, we kind of talk about it. I don't think it universally applies.
Well, that's interesting. I never thought about that. I wonder if this is true. You and I are only a sample set of two, but I wonder if people who are doing, you know, text boxes over data, you know, CRM, CMS type work are going to have a different experience if they can drop into their jobs within 3 months and be productive. Mm-hmm. But if you are developing, you know, firmware on a phone, baseband type stuff, you can't just hop from company to company every 3 months. So I wonder, we say software engineer,
yeah,
but that's such a broad stroke.
Very broad. Yeah. That's true. But I also think if you started out in those kinds of embedded environments, That can follow you, you know, kind of the ideas and the concepts you have about your career could follow you, because I only did, well, I don't want to say only, because it's still a significant amount of time. I did embedded development for 9 years. And then I moved over.
I just want to make sure that the listener followed that you said, I only did, you know, deep technical embedded firmware development for 9 years, just really a moment.
9 years, just a little 9 years, just a drop in the bucket. But even when I switched over and started doing more, I mean, I still did driver development, but I didn't consider it as low down in the stack as some of the things I did when I worked in telecom. You could see the amount of time it took to ramp up and the amount of time it took to get work done kind of shortening. But I still kept this mindset that I want to know everything about everything that I'm doing. I want to be able to debug everything under the sun. I want to be able to answer every question. Like, it really instilled in me this need to be an expert. And to be that kind of expert, I really had to spend a lot of time, a lot of intimate time with my products and the environment and my code. And I think a lot of that has been simplified, you know, in recent years, as much as, you know, you don't have to care as much about everything in order to be this expert and have these skills. So I do think, you know, the industry has transformed to it, so much so that people can become experts faster, but I still have this ingrained in me and I still want to know everything about everything that I touch. I don't know. Hopefully that's still valuable to somebody.
But at your last job, which the 9 year job, which was in the 90s, when you came in, you said straight out of college.
Yes.
What if they weren't welcoming? What if it wasn't nice? What if your boss was a jerk?
So this gets interesting, right? Because I think this is a layered conversation. So in one respect, from a technical skills, acquiring technical skills and nurturing my professional career, you know, I wanted to stay. But I will tell you honestly, as a Black woman in tech, I didn't feel like I had kind of the liberty to just jump around and move around. I know Black engineers that came out, generationally speaking, are on par with me. And we suffered from this terrible imposter syndrome, like really severe. And so to get a job, and I'll tell you, that job I had coming out of college, I mean, it was perfect. It was my dream job. It was software engineering, doing software development for the telecom industry. These were like my major and minors, right? Like, it was everything I actually wanted to do. And so, but I still had this insufferable imposter syndrome, such that I felt like, okay, I got lucky here and I can't leave because I can't get lucky again. Like, if I move somewhere else, they're going to find me out. Or if I leave, I'm not going to find another job. Like, I was really I did not understand the value that I had. And it took a while for me to overcome that. And so I think that was a reason why I stayed so long in my first job. It's certainly not why I stayed today. I'm over that. But that first job, it definitely influenced why I stayed so long.
It's good that you're over that today, because I've just celebrated my 15-year anniversary at Microsoft, and I'm still not over that. Like, one of these days, my boss is going to call me and he's like, you've just been coasting on charm for the last
you
got to
be kidding me.
I'm telling you, imposter syndrome, I waffle. For me, maybe it's like this for you. For me, imposter syndrome is, like, last week I worked on Microsoft Ignite and I helped lead the developer track, and I did a talk and I got some very nice tweets about the talk and some good feedback. I did it with Mark Rusinovich, the CTO.
Oh, yeah. I bookmarked that so I could watch it, where you guys went over the code and sysinternals and stuff.
Yeah. And there are a couple of tweets that I, like, you know, screenshot and sent my wife, and it's like, you know, best talk ever. You know, everyone gets that talk, best talk ever. So then I came off of that thinking, all right, I'm good at my job. They should pay me for this. And then I got home, and now it's Monday morning and it's lunchtime, and I'm like, oh, I'm so bad at my job. They're going to, you know, so it's just, there's no middle ground. There's only, I'm amazing, give me more money. I suck. What am I even doing? Like, I'm filling out an expense report is like the most adult thing that I've done this morning, you know?
Okay, so it's fair. There's probably no middle ground, and maybe I'm exaggerating when I say I'm completely over it, because I definitely still go through that. But it doesn't feel like it did back then. It doesn't feel like, you know, I'm either, you know, this company is just being charitable and no other company will. It doesn't feel like that anymore. But I definitely still have days where I'm like, why do they let me work here? So no, I understand that completely.
Yeah, that can be very challenging. When I was 93 or 94, I worked at a company called Foolproof Software, and we made software that would prevent kids from booting off the A drive in high school. Remember when you take a boot disk to high school?
Boot from anything.
You ever do that? You're like,
yes.
Stop me. I'm going to bring a boot disk from home. I'm going to boot off whatever I want. So people would take boot disks. So we wrote a boot sector virus and basically a good boot sector virus that prevented kids from booting off the thing. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, all of like 20, and I'm working here and I'm going to community college at night. And one of the senior engineers gave a presentation to the company, and I didn't know what he was going to do this. And it was, and remember, the company's called Foolproof. Mm-hmm. So the presentation was top 10 foolish pieces of code in the Foolproof code base. And 7 of them were me.
Oh my goodness.
So he called me out in an actual all hands, and I thought I was going to die, but I couldn't quit because that was my first job. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine what that would be like if I wasn't me.
Yeah. Yeah. And first of all, that's mean. So please, no one do that to anyone.
It hurts still, and it's 30 years later.
So mean. But yeah, like, that you couldn't quit, that you say you couldn't quit, because I'm sitting here thinking I would have quit. There's no way I could go back. Like, that would be so hard to do and face down. My goodness. Kudos to you for staying in there.
Well, so then the question is then, who am I, or who are we, mm-hmm. as now senior and principal engineers, to tell a young person, hang in there? Because generationally, I think you and I are within 10 years of each other, then are we, when we mentor early in career people, when we mentor young people, are we doing them a disservice when we tell them, you know, not suck it up, but we say, hey, you know, stick in there, it's hard. So what is the difference in your mind, Mecca, between technical resilience and telling someone just to suffer?
Oh, boy. So full disclosure, I do not tell people that I mentor to hang in there and stick it out. And I don't tell them that. I mean, I am very mindful that what worked for me and what might have worked for us when, you know, at that time when we came in, is not what works for people today. And it may be to their detriment to stick it out and hang in there. While I don't take the advice to hop every 2 to 3 years myself, I don't really see it as a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I think depending on, you know, like you said, software engineering is so broad. You could say you're a software engineer, but that could mean so many different things. And so I kind of split it up with folks that I mentor. You know, your technical skills and how you grow technically is not, or doesn't have to be, directly related to your job, to any job. You know, even my own young adult son, I focus on, you know, the same advice I tell him: find out what you like, find out what interests you, what you have a passion for, and develop your skills around that, and bring the technology to that, even if it's not computer science centered, because it's so much easier to take technology today and apply it to everything, right? You could develop applications and you could really, I mean, gosh, the amount of time it takes you from going from knowing nothing about, you know, how to create your own application to deploying an application is super short than, you know, compared to how it was when, you know, when we were coming up. And so I really tell people I mentor, you know, to pay attention to their impact, to understand the big picture, to know who cares about the work that they're doing, to understand their leadership. I give them more advice like that, and then tell them to always be learning, always be nurturing their skills, and let those things be independent. You know, there's a way to care for your career, that's your baby, and there's a way to care for yourself and your skill set and your value and what you build up in yourself, you know, what you bring to yourself to make yourself valuable. That's part of taking care of yourself. So, you know, if it's beneficial for you to stay based on your goals. You know, I implore them to set goals, set you know, different sets of goals, set your 1 year goal, set your 3 month goal, set your 5 year goals, you know, let that be your guide to how long you stay, and you know, really talk to them about how to watch for signs when it's stale and your growth is being stunted, and maybe you should start looking. Mm.
That's really good advice. I've seen other interviews with you and blog posts, and if I could describe you, I would say you're very intentional. Mm-hmm. You talk about mm-hmm. goals, and you talk about intentionality. You don't want people to just, it seems like, accept the defaults and just kind of like let life and let the wave just kind of take them. They need to be thinking about what the actual solution is and then what are the obstacles that stand in their way.
Yeah, that's very true. And it's I am intentional about being intentional because I feel like I spent a good portion of the beginning of my career expecting things to just come to me because I was doing great work. And the longer I work, the more I realize that that is just not true. You know, up to a certain point, you will be fulfilled in that. But if you don't start being explicit and clear with yourself about what you want, then you can't get mad when you don't get it, right? No one's watching you and babysitting your career and making sure good things happen to you. That just doesn't happen. I mean, maybe when you are brand new NCG, new college grad, you know, someone's assigned to you to kind of help guide you. But over the course of your career, you really have to own it. And I mean, I came to this realization on my own, and I really wish I would have done it sooner. But I also believe it happened for me the way it was supposed to happen. But if I could advise someone younger, someone on the path about coming to this realization and really owning their career, not just their career, but their life, you know, it gives you a more rich life experience and a more fulfilling existence to just be intentional with the time and space that you have.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, this is a time during COVID where a lot of engineers are very overwhelmed. I think we're all overwhelmed. And the ability to talk to someone is absolutely essential. Folks like BetterHelp are trying to make therapy more accessible. Life doesn't come with a user's manual, and when it's not working for you, it's very normal to feel stuck. Being able to find someone to talk to, especially if you're struggling with imposter syndrome, like a lot of us engineers do, can be really, really important. As the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. Plus, it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. If things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/hanselminutes. That's better, H-E-L-P, help.com/hanselminutes.
What is the right amount of time before people start getting a little itchy about, like, yeah, you know, it's time to promo me? I've heard people, when I'm in a room with people my age, I hear them saying, these kids want senior engineer in 3 months, mm-hmm. and they want principal in 5 years or whatever. You know, it took me 10 years before I had those kind of titles, and mm-hmm. 15 even more. Has there been a currency conversion when it comes to titles, and there's a new setup for titles?
I blame social media entirely for this. I just remember not caring, like just working and doing the work and not being worried about this thing. And I think this, you know, we're hyper-connected now, and people start to do this false equivalency thing when they, you know, consider someone on the internet that they know nothing about, working for a company that they also know nothing about, and just comparing how long you've been there and how much you might know. And they're like, I'm smarter than that guy. I should be a senior. I think this is part of knowing the company that you work for. And I mean, full disclosure, right? Like every engineering organization I've worked for has been terrible about being clear with how long you should be at one level and what the titles are and what they mean. And it all feels very made up to me, I'll tell you quite honestly, which is why I don't make such a big deal about it. But I will say that jump to senior, oh man, I almost lost my mind over that thing. Like, it was so important to me. It was just, it was just everything to me. So I think, you know, this, there's no universal answer for this, unfortunately. I think the company that you work for is going to have some criteria, and you'll have to be familiar and figure out if you're comfortable. I think there's nothing wrong with advocating for yourself. Most companies will, you know, force you to be performing at the level you want to be promoted to in order to get promoted to that level. That seems pretty consistent. So I think you just have to take inventory and know what you're doing and compare to other people at that level. But I think it's driving us crazy, and I really wish we could get away from it. I think engineering leadership could definitely help the folks that are responsible for defining these titles. If they could just get really, really clear with folks, then this will help kind of calm people down a bit. But yeah, folks come out of undergrad expecting to be seniors. And I don't know. That seems like a reach, because it's not just what you know, right? It's, can you lead? Can you convince people? Can you bring people together? Can you bring out the best in others? And I think there's some maturity required for that.
Yeah. And I never want to be ageist, and I never want to be a gatekeeper or say, sure, you know, you're not, because, you know, everyone thinks they're a 10X engineer. When, yeah, I was teaching my son how to drive, he says, I'm a very good driver. And I said, well, let's talk about how the normal distribution works. Like 50% of drivers are bad, right? By definition of how statistics work. So which one are you? Like, you know, that's kind of an oversimplification of the normal curve, but you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, everybody says they're a good driver.
Yeah. And I do think the truth is that there are probably more good, very smart, maybe even uniquely creative developers out there today. Hmm. But again, that's not all that it takes, you know, exactly, to be senior, to be principal, to get more into these leadership positions. There are still some skills required in this field that you have to acquire. Like, I mean, I don't know how many students out there still do technical writing or document stuff. It's very rare that I come across really good docs for, you know, architectures or even code or designs. And so you have to be able to communicate well. And I feel like communication has suffered a bit because of all this emphasis on technical skills and kind of not as much on the communication part. So I do think there's still something. I agree. Not ageist, because I do think there are, I've met people of all ages that are good with the communication and the collaboration. But yeah, everyone's not. I mean, you just can't have everyone. I mean, it would be beautiful if we all were, and then we'd be, you know, we'd be on the moon now, right?
Yeah. I've been trying to get everyone to blog forever, you know, and mm-hmm. like blogging is dead. Everyone's blogging is dead. But like blogging was technical writing when I didn't mm-hmm. have a technical writing job.
Yep.
And, you know, I would say a large part of my career was explaining stuff publicly because no one would listen internally. Mm-hmm. And I think that made me a decent technical communicator. And I totally agree with you. We're doing all these LeetCode code thing. Everyone's grinding on LeetCode code. And then we have social media saying, work for 6 months and you can get a job in tech making six figures. And I want to break, you know, the wealth gap. I want to get generational wealth, you know, to be a thing, but there's a huge difference between working for 9 years in mm-hmm. firmware and grinding LeetCode for a summer.
Oh my goodness. I want to be equal opportunity here. I want to open the gates wider. I want more to come in. But there, I don't know, like I fell in love with computer science, and not that that's the only way that you can come to it and love it, mm-hmm. but I feel like you kind of have to find your love in it in some kind of way and not just do it for the money. And I do not knock doing things for the money. Don't get me wrong. Money is important. We have to get paid. But like, if you want to build a career, I think it's important that you try to find your passion. There are lots of ways to build out, but trying to find your passion in it is important. And so I know some folks that do boot camps and do these, you know, short stints and get their foot in the door. And then they further, you know, they further their education. They keep learning. I think that that is a really good thing to do. As a matter of fact, I think you have to keep learning, period, whether you go to formal school or not. I mean, I take classes every month. I listen to webinars every week. It's a continual learning process. And so, but you kind of have to know what is important to learn. And, you know, back to the conversation about positions and titles, you know, understanding everything that's important to doing this work is key. And it's not just, can you write code? That is maybe a fifth of what you will wind up doing if you make a career out of this skill set.
That is very, very, very well said. This is definitely the career. Other than like medicine and engineering are like the two careers where you're just like, you're always going to, you know, webinars, always getting certifications. My wife is a nurse and she's constantly learning about new techniques. And I've met people and read code where I'm reading code from the past. Mm-hmm. And I have this quote that I joke about a little bit, which is, do you have 20 years experience or do you have the same year 20 times?
Oh, yeah, that's very good. Yep.
And you just like, you can read some code. And when we were reading Mark Rusinovich's code, I was like, this code smells like the 90s. Like, what is going on here? And then we would go and scroll down a little bit and we'd find some commit from 2015 and we'd go, there you go. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like reading old English and then reading modern English in the same exact paper.
That's fun. Yeah, no, that's a lot of fun. I would love to read some of my old code. I remember my first job even, it would be hard to read it because when I worked in the telecom industry, we didn't even program in a standard language, right? I don't know if you ever experienced this, but companies used to have proprietary languages and you kind of had to learn them. And they weren't that hard to learn because they were like variations of standard languages. So I programmed in something called SL1, Switching Language 1. And it was very C-like, very kind of Pascal C-like. But in that system, when there was a defect found, we had to patch our own code. We had to write our own patches. So we had to literally find the spot, addresses in memory, and write our own assembler. And I don't know how many folks have written assembler, but walking back through assembler code, that's one area where you can't influence it, right? Like it's going to be the same regardless. But even reading old C code, you know, it's probably dated. There were things that you would do in old styles, like you said, old English. I hope you guys pulled out an accent when you did that, because I would love to hear C code read in an old English accent.
Yes, the Bridgerton reading of this 5,000 line C file. I did a thing Delphi. I was going to say Pascal. It was in Delphi, and it was a device. Someone had written the device driver for a 3D sound card. Mm-hmm. And I wrote the control panel for it. So I drew a picture of a living room as viewed from above, and mm-hmm. then you would position your speakers. And then I had to drop down into inline assembler. So you'd have this high level Pascal, and you go Pascal, 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 and then it's like unsafe. And then suddenly you're literally poking at random places, and you're off by a byte, and you reboot the computer and you try again. And there was no safe calls to a device driver.
No.
Here's the thing. It's fun to reminisce with someone from that time. It's fun to sit with you. But then when I try to explain it to a young person, they look at me like I'm like romancing about, you know, taking two stones and making fire. And they're like, that's adorable, old man.
Right? They have zero understanding or concept of such a thing. I don't know that they know what assembler looks like even, or would care.
But then that's the question that I've been exploring this question over the last few months as I've been rebuilding a Commodore 64. Mm-hmm. I found a Commodore 64 and I literally had to replace a capacitor on the mm-hmm. disk drive, like soldering. That's a level of debugging. Like this capacitor is out. And everyone's like, why are you doing this? I'm like, well, I'm exploring my history. Mm-hmm. And they're like, but how does that help you work in Azure? I'm like, I'm pretty sure it doesn't. But, you know, I really have an appreciation for the stack.
Yes.
Because people always say full stack engineer. Like if you're working on firmware for what, like Sony Ericsson phones, I'm pretty sure when you have your iPhone, you feel a sense of like having sat on top of the stack.
I mean, this is, it's different. A disclaimer to everything I say, I understand it's different. But I mean, I came to love computer science kind of by way of electrical engineering almost because I loved opening things and examining the circuitry and understanding logic and you know, playing with these components. I did my minor in electrical engineering, microcomputer based design. And so I really, you know, do enjoy the idea of toying with the actual internals. And that really, you know, gave me the understanding such that assembler wasn't a big deal, right? Like there's a connection there when you understand what your programming language, what your programming instruction gets converted to, all the way to the physical level. But I really did. My first computer was put together by a friend of my mother's, and I'm like in awe, like, what? Like at the end, I have my own personal computer after all of this. And even today, my niece recently broke her external hard drive that she stores all of her pictures on. And I'm like, do you have a backup? And she's like, well, no, this is, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this is the worst, this is the worst backup plan in the history of disks. But, you know, I opened it up and looked and checked if anything looked off, but I don't have a proper soldering station. So I'm like, let me close this before I damage it. But being at that level is where my passion all started. And it doesn't go away because it's not related to my job anymore. It's an actual passion. And so when you're like, how does this help you with Azure? Like, who cares? I love it. I want to play with it. I ordered some Raspberry Pi kits just so I could toy around and see what I could do. I mean, it's fun. And that's what I mean about finding your passion in it, because I think you'll last longer in it and you'll be more intellectually curious and it'll take you in different places and it won't feel like an albatross around your neck that you have to drag yourself to make money.
My dad said that he didn't understand what I did for a living. And then we were hanging out in his garage and he's a woodworker. Mm-hmm. And he used to be a cabinet maker before he was a firefighter. And he would spend all day building cabinets. And then he would build what he really wanted to build in his garage with his woodworking. And I realized that it's the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. His bandsaw, I don't even know the words. I'm trying to like make up woodworking words here. Like I know what I'm talking about. You know, he's got a bandsaw and a sander and this and that, you know, and that's my soldering station and my oscilloscope. Yeah. And I'll do the thing I do in my day job. And then I'll do the thing I want to do at night in mm-hmm. the same vein. But he and I are the same.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's just that the skills that you have, like most people don't know the names of the components on a circuit board, right? Like they would sound like you trying to describe your dad's stuff. So I totally agree. I teach myself programming languages that I never use, that I don't even have prospects to use, just that I don't use in my day job. But it's fun. I love learning new languages.
So you've been at your current job for 16 years. Mm-hmm. How do you know that you'll be a lifer? We call people at Microsoft who've been there forever lifers, and they'll just retire there.
I don't know that I'll be a lifer. I and I wouldn't box myself in like that anyway, right? Like, I mean, innovation is happening at light speed these days, right? Like something could come out in the next 6 months that just sets my hair on fire and I'll just feel like I have to go be involved. And if my current company can't, you know, create a lane for me to be involved in that, maybe I'll chase that. I don't want to limit myself in that way, but I do love what I do today. I think my company, my present company, is run by smart leaders. I think they're continually innovating, and these are things that are important to me. You know, I have kind of the liberty to research things that are really interesting to me and bring ideas to leadership and have them listen. So, I mean, if anything, if none of that changes, yeah, I'll hang around. I mean, but yeah, I wouldn't limit my future by guaranteeing lifehood with any company.
That sounds like really good advice to anyone at any stage. If you have smart leaders that you trust, if you trust your boss, if you can have a conversation with your boss, and if the work you're working on is satisfying, then you should probably stick around in your job and see where it takes you. Very cool. Thanks so much, Mecca Williams, for chatting with me today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's been my pleasure.
We've been chatting with Mecca Williams. She's a principal engineer at NetApp, and this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.